WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour begins with information about Legal Services of Greater Miami, which defends the civil legal rights of the less fortunate in Miami-Dade and Monroe counties. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Legal Services of Greater Miami is celebrating its 50th anniversary and has helped countless numbers of people access what may be a bewildering legal system. That's up in minutes. Also on this Thursday, Linda Gassenheimer's Food and Dining will focus on really fabulous American breakfasts with South Beach Food and Wine Festival founder Lee Brian Schrager. He's put 50 of the best morning spots into a new book. So stay with us, Topical Currents and Legal Services next after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Consumers may find fewer obstacles to bringing class action lawsuits against financial firms. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is proposing a new rule to do just that. NPR's Chris Arnold reports scores of consumer groups support that move. The industry is strongly opposed.
Many credit card and loan agreements in the fine print have what's called a mandatory arbitration clause. It says by signing, you give up the right to bring a class action lawsuit against your bank. Richard Cordray is the director of the CFPB. He says companies are evading the legal system.
So today we're proposing a new rule that would ban mandatory arbitration clauses from denying groups of consumers their day in court. This is designed to protect consumers' right to pursue justice and relief and to deter companies from violating the law.
But industry groups say if the rule goes into effect, it would spark a wave of frivolous lawsuits that would hurt companies and raise prices for consumers. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
By this summer, hundreds of electronic cigarette brands are expected to be subject to the same federal review as traditional cigarettes or cigars. The Food and Drug Administration is out with tougher rules that also restrict e-cigarette sales to consumers under the age of 18. Manufacturers warn that compliance could prove too costly for them to stay in business. Some Houston residents are told to close their windows, and an elementary school is evacuated because of a massive fire at a nearby warehouse complex that is releasing hazardous chemicals into the air. The fire department did not immediately disclose what materials pose a threat. So far, there are no reports of injuries or what caused the fire. Tensions escalating along the boundary between Israel and the Gaza Strip, with militants firing mortars and Israel responding with tank shells and airstrikes. NPR's Emily Harris reports from Jerusalem that Israel also uncovered a second tunnel leading from Gaza into Israel.
An Israeli military spokesman called the exchanges of fire Wednesday and Thursday the most serious escalation between Israel and militants in Gaza since the end of the 2014 war. A senior leader with Hamas, which runs Gaza, said its militants were trying to stop Israeli bulldozers operating near the fence that surrounds Gaza. Hamas accused Israel of breaking a ceasefire agreement. Israel says Hamas fired mortars at soldiers searching for tunnels dug from Gaza into Israel that could be used for attacks inside Israel. The military announced finding a tunnel, the second such discovery in recent weeks. Emily Harris, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Trapped for nearly a week, three more people have been pulled out alive from the debris of a collapsed building in Nairobi, Kenya. Today's development offers some hope to those rescuers who fear that with each passing day, the death toll will keep rising. 70 people have been missing since the seven-story building collapsed. Local authorities have confirmed 36 deaths. From Washington, this is NPR News.
Mother's Day is here again, and once again, chances are you find that your busy life has kept you from ordering the flowers you want to send, right? Well, not to worry. WLRN has the answer for you. I'm Caroline Brader-Watts, along with Peter J. and Mia Lorenzo.
That's right. We are ready to take your order right now for a beautiful arrangement of mixed flowers in pastel colors, created and shipped by Field of Flowers to anywhere in the United States and Canada in time for Mother's Day, we promise. A contribution of $120 sends those flowers on their way, along with your personal message, and supports the programs you rely on every day on WLRN. Call us now at 1-866-247-9576 or simply place your order online at WLRN.org.
And for a really special surprise, make a pledge of $175, and your mom will receive a luxurious arrangement of mixed flowers, including roses, lilies, hydrangea, and other blooms in a tall glass vase.
And here's another goodie. You'll also be automatically entered to win brunch for four at Marty's New River Bistro at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. You'll also get a four-pack of tickets to see WLRN Radio Theater's production of Little Women at the Broward Center. That's all on Mother's Day. But hurry, the clock is ticking on this as well. We'll pick the name of that very lucky person on Friday at 12 noon.
Think how important that special mom is in your life. Then consider the importance of WLRN in your daily routine. Your gift honors both by sending flowers to that most deserving of persons and your support to the station that stimulates, informs, and entertains you every day. Make that gift now online at WLRN.org, or you can phone it in at 866-247-9576.
Send those flowers on their way now at 866-247-9576 or online at WLRN.org. And we thank you very much.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include LegalZoom, dedicated to providing legal help to all Americans through online services, personal customer support, and legal advice through independent attorneys. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com.
The WLRN mobile app is available now for Apple and Android devices. Search WLRN in the Apple App Store or in Google Play. You'll have unlimited access to WLRN radio, live broadcasts, news stories, features, and more. The WLRN mobile app, it's free and available now.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Current. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman with you on this Thursday afternoon. No rain this afternoon.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's cool.
Well, this hour, our program begins with word about legal services of Greater Miami. Its attorneys work for the civil legal rights of low-income persons in both Miami-Dade and Monroe counties.
And congratulations are in order to Legal Services of Greater Miami. It's the 50th anniversary of its creation. We'll have word about a big anniversary gala that's set for this Saturday. It's called The Heart of Giving.
It's quite a soiree with some 500 attendees. And with us to talk about Legal Services of Greater Miami is one of its attorneys, Evian White.
We'll also visit with two people who've relied on legal services or who are relying on legal services for help now. Welcome, Evian White.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Or something.
Yes.
Good to have you.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, if you would, just if we could start with a little history. We know it's 50 years old, the background and the mission of Legal Services of Greater Miami.
Legal Services of Greater Miami was born out of the War on Poverty. President Johnson started this back in 1966. We were founded in an era when the poverty rate was about 19%. So we were founded out of that movement. We opened our doors in the first month. We had 200 clients. Now we serve annually about 30,000 clients. There's a need.
30,000 just in this area.
Yes, yeah. In Monroe County and Dade County.
When you say the poverty level was 19% back then, what is it today?
It depends. Well, nationally, it is a little less at this point. So the war on poverty is making strides. So that's good.
Okay.
But there's still a lot of work to be done.
And just more on a personal level, what was your reason for joining the Legal Services of Greater Miami?
I thought the legal career would be the career where I could make the greatest difference in my community. So I'd always been involved civically in my community through volunteering, but I wanted to take it to the next step and advocate for our community on a different level. So that's why I went to law school.
Is it similar for a lot of budding attorneys to want to do either public defender or be in legal services and do some really kind of good works for the general public?
It is. It's becoming more and more common, especially because we have a really incredible opportunity as direct service providers to get hands-on training from the first day on the job. That's a very incredible and valuable opportunity for young attorneys. So they get intrinsic value from it, but they also get real valuable skills.
It also looks good on a resume that you've also sort of done your dues, paid your dues.
Absolutely.
Do clients seek you out? Do they know about you? Do you find them? How does that work? How do you find these 30,000 people?
All of the above.
Okay.
So we do actively do outreach, different radio shows, TV, pamphlets. We do Know Your Rights sessions throughout the community with different agencies. We partner with several agencies who have access to different communities.
Such as?
For example, we work with South Florida Voices for Working Families. We work with FOM. We work with Community Justice Project. We work with local homeless shelters so that folks who are coming into their doors who have legal problems can be directed to us.
Now, many social services have been cut back in recent years. How has that affected legal services of Greater Miami?
Well, it's definitely affected us. We are definitely facing budget cuts, even as recent as this week, with the cuts to the Homeless Trust. Our grants there have been cut significantly, like many other service providers here in Miami-Dade County. And the funding for legal services is really dependent on the climate of politics, like so much else that we see today, mm-hmm. because our funding comes from Legal Services Corporation, which is funded by Congress. So depending on the political winds, our funding can go up, can go down. And we've faced two or three times in the past very critical cuts in our funding, which have led to layoffs, which led to office closures, which nearly crippled our program.
Which led to people not getting help.
Exactly. At the bottom line is folks in the community suffer.
So do you also rely on private donations? Is that what
yes.
this gala is about?
Yes. So the gala is really to celebrate the 50 years and all of the obstacles we've had to overcome to get us here and to hopefully steward us into the next 50 years. Marcia Sipin, our executive director, has been there for 40 of those 50 years. Mm-hmm. So it's really a testament to her leadership that through all of this, we've been able to survive the bumpy seas. So the gala is really to celebrate our 50 years of existence. And of course, we do depend largely on private funding, which means that awareness is huge so that we can continue getting those.
What are some of the common civil actions that legal services handles?
About 60% of our work right now is housing related. And the other 40% is a mix of mostly public benefits work and community economic development. So we have three departments. We have the housing department, public benefits, and then we have a community economic development department. And housing, we represent people both affirmatively, meaning we represent people who need help in getting access to certain programs, or we defend folks who might be losing their housing. On public benefits, it's exactly what you'd imagine. We challenge different rules that prevent people from getting benefits from the government or to get access to things like food stamps and other programs.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring in, because we have an example of a housing issue and a former client of yours. Her name is Glovia Jay, and she says that the legal services of Greater Miami literally saved her life. So, Glovia, come a little closer and tell us what happened to you and how you found legal services.
My name is Glovia Jay, and I was in a situation where I was threatened and served eviction notice because I had a dog. I worked for many years with children, and I had the dog for a long time, but the dog always stayed with the kids when I was off. So when I retired, I came home with Cinnamon. His name is Cinnamon. And the landlord gave me 15 days to get rid of Cinnamon because there was no dogs allowed on the premises. So I heard through a friend about legal aid, and I called them, and I talked with Ms. White. And we made an appointment, and I went to visit them, and we sit down and we talk, and I told about my situation. And at the time, I had a health problem also. So we set up an appointment. I met with her, and we discussed the things that they could do for me in order for me to keep my housing and my pet.
Because now, you want to explain that Cinnamon was a service dog. Is that correct?
Yes.
You need Cinnamon. He's a, what is the word?
confirmed or a licensed service dog.
Yeah. He helps you with your you with your disabilities.
Yes. Right. Cinnamon is very helpful with hearing the door because of my hearing problem, and I was very depressed after I was told that I couldn't have him any longer. So there was days when I just didn't want to leave out of the house or get out of the bed. And he would literally get up in my chest to get me out of bed. And once I got up, then he would hop down and he would just go on about his daily business. But he played a very important part in my life.
Evian, how common is something like this where, you know, someone doesn't know that they do have these rights, and so Glovia obviously had a right to keep Cinnamon. It's a service dog. So,
unfortunately, we encounter folks all the time who do not know about their rights. That's a huge, huge problem, and that's part of what we do as well, is educate the community about their rights to empower them, because people face all kinds of discrimination in their housing. We handle discrimination cases as well, all kinds of discrimination that still exists today. And people just don't know their rights, or they're scared and they don't know what they can do.
Right.
I mentioned there's a website where people can look over the basics of what perhaps you might be handling.
Yes, we do have a website. It is www.legalservicesmiami.org. And we have a section that discusses the types of cases we handle. We even have an online intake form that we rolled out this year so people can apply online to become our clients. And we also have a lot of self-help materials so people can go on and access those.
And how about the criteria to qualify?
Our office represents low-income individuals who are either citizens, permanent residents, or another form of eligible immigrant. We do have restrictions on immigration status and income because we are federally funded.
And this is for civil. If we're criminal, they'd go to the public defender.
Right? Correct.
And are you always looking for attorneys?
Now and then, it depends. It depends on funding, mostly. I mean,
you mean to have the amount of
exactly.
money to pay them?
Ideally, okay. Yes, we're always looking for attorneys because we have more work than we can handle.
I don't imagine it's the top of the pay scale for attorneys.
You know, we actually are among the highest paid public interest attorneys in Dade County, if not the state. To be honest, we are well compensated for the field that we are in, and we also have an excellent benefits package because not only do we do really good work for the community, our office walks the walk and really treats its employees well, and we have wonderful benefits packages.
It's a very exhausting job. You have a lot of caseload.
Yes, it's exhausting, but it's wonderfully exhausting.
Fulfilling.
Yes. I always tell people I'm so grateful and lucky. It's a privilege to be able to do what I do and wake up in the morning to do this work, because how often do folks get to do what they love?
Do you ever feel like sometimes when you are helping people, do you ever feel like you wish you could help more people, and you look out there and you just say, I can't do everything, or I can only do what I can do?
There are some moments like that. Yes. That I wish I could clone myself times three or four or five. Right. Yes. But you know, you do what you can do, and we try to do systemic cases as well to affect the community at large so that we are helping the maximum number of folks.
What does that mean? Like class action?
We are not allowed to do class actions. Oh. There's a restriction on that. But for example, right now I'm working with Little Farm Mobile Home Park, where we represent. Right. So we represent the entire mobile home park so that we're able to help everyone and not just one individual. Or we had a case in our office where our office sued to get autism services for children with autism. And that went into effect across the entire state. Mm.
We're speaking with Evian White. She's an attorney with Legal Services of Greater Miami. She was a finalist in the Go-Getter category of the Hype Miami Awards.
And we're going to meet another client.
And Glovia Jay is a former client. We're going to meet another client, Felix Cepeda, when we get back on Topical Currents.
The WLRN Community Advisory Board holds its regularly scheduled meeting Thursday, May 12th, 12 noon at WLRN Conference Room 170, 172 Northeast 15th Street, Miami, Florida, 33132. More information at WLRN.org.
Celebrate Mother's Day and support WLRN at the same time by making a contribution at WLRN.org.
As our thank you, you can choose from one of two beautiful arrangements from Field of Flowers.
You'll also be automatically entered to win a 4-pack of tickets to see WLRN Radio Theater's production of Little Women and Brunch at the Broward Center.
You're going to send the flowers. You want to support WLRN. Do them both now at WLRN.org or call 1-866-247-9576. And thanks.
The 20th Redland International Orchid Festival is May 13th to 15th at the Redland Fruit and Spice Park, with over 65 orchid nurseries from around the world, classes, and more in a festive open market atmosphere. Details at redlandorchidfestival.org.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We continue our discussion of legal services of Greater Miami with one of its attorneys, Evian White. We've also heard in studio from Glovia Jay. She's a former client of legal services of Greater Miami. And if you'd like to join in with a comment or perhaps a question, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org.
So why don't we introduce our other guest? His name is Felix Zapata. He's currently a legal services client. He's a U.S. Army veteran. Welcome to you, Felix.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. You served in Iraq in 2003, so first we want to thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So tell us your story and the circumstances that required getting the assistance from Legal Services of Greater Miami.
Sure. I appreciate you guys doing this. But I served in the military from 2001 to 2015, and I did one tour in Iraq. When I came back from Iraq, I had a very tough time, you know, coping in the civilian life when I got back. So based on my wife's recommendation, I went to see a psychiatrist, so they determined that I had PTSD chronic. It was very fast, so what they did in the military, they chaptered me out, which they got me out of the military, but they didn't do a medical process, which will entitle me with some benefits. So they just got me out with zero benefits.
You mean they discharged you honorably but didn't give you any benefits for your disability?
Correct.
Okay.
That's exactly what happened. At that time, I didn't know anything. So to me, it was normal, you know, because to me, I was just getting my benefits based on getting honorable discharge. So it was normal to me. I didn't know nothing better. But I kept struggling. When I got out, I went to the VA. They denied my benefits. They didn't want to do anything about it. So I got really frustrated. So years went by. I mean, we're talking about from 2005 up all the way up to 2011. I was struggling very, very much. And I finally decided to go back to the VA to try to get some help. But my case was very difficult. So the VA office in Hialeah, they told me that they couldn't help me much with my case because they thought that maybe I didn't have anything there. But I knew I had something there because, you know, based on what I've heard from my peers in the military. So one guy there named Kenneth Peters, he was very helpful. He told me that I had one shot, and that was to go to Legal Service of Greater Miami. And there I went. I spoke to Liam McGivern. He has been very helpful in my case. And he told me that it was a tough case, that he didn't know what to expect from it. But I brought everything about all my medical records from what I was in after I got out. So he submitted everything. And a couple of years later, we finally got a word, and they entitled all my benefits dating back to 2005.
So it took years. It took a number of years.
It took 8-9 years to get it done. Yeah.
Evian, tell us about this Legal Services Veteran Advocacy Project, which is what Felix took advantage of. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is that a program of Legal Services of Greater Miami?
It's a project within our program.
Okay.
Right. And Liam McGivern really spearheaded that. He's another one of the attorneys there when he got a fellowship, a SCADN fellowship, to be at Legal Services to do this work, to do discharge upgrade work, and to work with people like Mr. Cepeda.
How common is it? I'll ask either you, Felix, or you, Evian, how common is it for veterans not to get what's coming to them and then not knowing where to go?
Felix, if you want to answer that, you probably have better knowledge of that on the ground. Yeah,
sure. It's actually very common. Because when you only know one thing in the military is the job that you have been provided and you've been trained on. Once you get out, you don't know nothing about it. You don't know the afterlife about it, the benefits. You don't know nothing about it. So if you don't seek help to someone, a professional that can guide you through it, I've met people from the Vietnam era where they're just getting their benefits now because they didn't know nothing about it. So it's actually very, very common.
Wow. I wonder if there could be more outreach among veterans, you know, that you would do in order to let them know how to get what their benefits or what they're entitled to.
Yeah, I wish that could happen, but the what I do is word of mouth. So every time I go to the VA, I try to reach out to people that they're there, ask them questions why they're there, and try to guide them, because my process has taught me a lot, and you know. And I try to help as many people as I can, as many veterans I can. Even with my peers, they be now, when they get out of the military, when they got out, they didn't know nothing about it. So they learn a lot from me. And they actually, a couple of them, getting benefits because I guide them through them. And they're very thankful.
Evian, you wanted to say something?
And we do, right. And we do outreach as well for folks who, you know, at the VAs, we work with other groups. I know Liam is very active in that. But I agree with Felix that the most effective way is word of mouth. It really is.
Sounds Felix, like you might have a legal career ahead of you.
Evian, something you said a minute ago made me think that perhaps there's a possibility that, say, a foundation or an individual had a special area of indigent law that they're most interested in could actually fund a position at Legal Services?
Absolutely. So there are some fellowship programs that are already tailored to this. So right now we have another attorney at our office who's an Equal Justice Works Fellow, which means that she created her own project to work at the office to form mobile homeowners associations.
And wrote a grant or something too?
It's a grant process, right. And it's a national program, and she was accepted to be at Legal Services to do that work. But we do work with other foundations and private donors on occasion when there are specific projects based on need or interest or whatever it may be to do work tailored to one area.
Or like a memorial kind of a position.
We would do that
like
too.
That. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You're in Miami-Dade and Monroe.
Yes.
Is there anything in Broward and Palm Beach that you know of?
Yes, absolutely. There are, each county or counties have their own service area. So in Broward, there's the Broward County Legal Aid Office.
Okay.
In Palm Beach,
I've
there's...
got the number for Broward also. 954-765-8950. That's Legal Aid Services of Broward County, 954-765-8950.
Okay. We have a little time left before we go, and I want to talk about the Heart of Giving Gala because it's important. It's important for fundraising for Legal Services. So tell us about it.
It is going to be a wonderful event at the JW Marriott Marquis right here downtown. It is Saturday, May 7th.
So this Saturday night.
Yes, at 7 p.m. To learn more, to register for the event, or to receive sponsorship information, folks can visit our website at www.legalservicesmiami.org. And it is really to honor our 50th year of service to Miami by raising money to help advance the mission of providing free legal assistance for the most vulnerable people in our community.
So again, that's this Saturday night. It's at the JW Marriott Marquis. It's on 255 Biscayne Boulevard. I see that Billy Corbin is your MC.
Yes, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz will be our keynote speaker, so that will be wonderful as well.
Be a lot to talk about.
Very much so.
We want to thank our guests also, Globia Jay. She's a former client of Legal Services of Greater Miami. And Globia, be sure and say hello to Cinnamon for us.
I sure will, and thank you all so much for having me.
We're glad things worked out for you, Globia, and thanks.
You. And they are the greatest legal services to help that anybody that needs it should consider calling.
I'm sure.
They're wonderful.
We also want to thank you, Felix Cepeda, and a U.S. Army veteran, and we're very glad that things are working out for you and you're finally getting what you're entitled to.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for doing this.
It's our pleasure.
Food and dining.
Oh, and wait, we want to thank, we forgot to thank Evian White, who's an attorney with Legal Services of Greater Miami. And thank you very much.
Of course.
It's been very enlightening half hour. Thank you.
Food and dining up next.
IMAX, in cooperation with NASA, invites you aboard the International Space Station in A Beautiful Planet 3D, now playing at AutoNation IMAX 3D Theater. Audiences will see stunning new images of our magnificent blue planet on the giant screen. It's a giant universe out there, but there's nowhere like Earth. A Beautiful Planet 3D, narrated by Jennifer Lawrence. More information at mods.org.
Hi, I'm Michael Stock. Every Sunday on Folk and Acoustic Music, I bring you the best in contemporary and traditional bluegrass, blues, old-time music, and folk music, plus guests in the studio. This week, celebrating the release of his new CD, Jim Worster. I'll also play some songs for Mom, being Mother's Day. The public storyteller with Dr. Karen Neal is at 4 o'clock, Folk and Acoustic Music, Sunday, starting at 2.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and you can show the mom in your life how much she means to you by giving to WLRN.
Select an arrangement and make your contribution, and WLRN will send your mom that special gift along with your personal message from Field of Flowers.
And they'll be delivered in time for Mother's Day anywhere in the United States and Canada.
It's a great way to take care of mom and help WLRN at the same time.
You can give online at WLRN.org or by calling 866-247-9576. And thanks.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Well, doctors and mothers forever preach that breakfast is the most important meal for good health and performance. Some people doubt that. But anyway, today, chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer and our special guest talk about how to find the very best, most scrumptious breakfasts of all. Welcome, Linda.
Great to be with you. And Bonnie, so nice to have you back here.
Thank you.
In studio. You're feeling better now.
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Well, tell me something. Joe, Bonnie, do you eat breakfast? Oh, this is pause. There's a pause here. Well,
sometimes.
You should know the answer.
Okay, so, many people eat breakfast for dinner.
That's true.
That's like true. That. Well, our guest today is going to make us really love breakfast. He's Lee Brian Schrager, and we all know him as the founder and director of the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. And his latest book is America's Best Breakfast, Favorite Local Recipes from Coast to Coast. So let's welcome Lee Schrager.
Good morning. Good to be here. Thanks, Linda.
Well, he's brought food, so we're glad you're here, too. Other than we'd love to see you.
Thank you. Likewise.
And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What's your favorite breakfast? Do you have any questions or suggestions for Lee Schrager? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And email?
Is radio at WLRN.org.
And, of course, with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by phone. Fred writes the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read in the Miami Herald. And also his wine column is in Saturday's Miami Herald food section. Fred, are we drinking with breakfast?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Wine with breakfast?
Well, you know me. Bring it on.
What about mimosas, friend?
What about them, huh? Yeah. That's one good possibility, and I think there might be a few others.
Bloody Marys?
I figured he might have a few things.
Bellinis?
So, Lee Schwager, first of all, congratulations on the book. It's a beautifully photographed book.
It is a beautiful book, and I can all thanks to Evan Sung, who is a photographer who worked on my second book with Adina Sussman, my co-author in this book, and Evan is a fantastic photographer, and I fell in love with his photos when we were doing Fried and True, my fried chicken road trip a few years ago.
So now we're going from fried chicken to breakfast.
We're going to all my favorite foods.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So, well, okay, then why did you pick breakfast for your next book? Why would you pick that topic?
Well, I do believe that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And when I think back to growing up, breakfast is that meal that has the most memories for me of my family and growing up with my brothers. Growing up, you know, after school, one brother worked or another brother was in a band class, and we didn't always have breakfast. We didn't always have dinner together, but we always had breakfast together.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island in Massapequa, Long Island. And to this day, breakfast is still my favorite meal of the day. And I love that you can have breakfast for lunch, dinner, late night, and you can wear your bathrobe and not feel guilty.
Is it the aromas? Is it is it the memories? Or is it just that you love those foods?
I think a combination of everything. Yeah. Listen, who doesn't love to wake up and smell great coffee and
you know,
something baking in the oven and, you know, bacon
in the
skillet?
Just a minute, I want to know something. You wake up and smell it. Who's making it?
Well, growing up, you wake up. Yeah.
Right.
Now if I smell it, I'm making it.
Okay. Well, now, so then you're telling us you do have breakfast yourself.
I do have breakfast.
And so what's your favorite one?
I think it depends. During the week, it's different from the weekends, and it's certainly different when I'm traveling. And, you know, if I'm home, I love oatmeal. There's a great recipe in America's Best Breakfast for a oatmeal, almost like a creme brulee. But I love oatmeal. I love
oatmeal creme brulee.
There's an oatmeal creme brulee in my cookbook.
Wow.
It's delicious. but I think, you know, normally oatmeal is my breakfast of choice at home. Oatmeal's, I love brown sugar and then fresh berries, and that's my breakfast for the day.
Well, that sounds good.
And on a weekend, I get a little more creative, and I've cooked, you know, everything in America's Best Breakfast a few times.
You have?
I have, of course.
Personally yourself?
In
a home, so that you know it'll work in someone else's home.
Sure.
Not every recipe, kitchen.
Of course. I mean, every recipe is geared towards a home cook, and you certainly, not only does the publisher test your recipes, but, you know, we test them before we turn them in to make sure that they
and
are.
And you have a co-writer.
I have a co-writer, Adina Sussman, who has worked on three of my books. We did the Food Network South Beach Wine and Food Festival cookbook about 6 years ago, Fried and True 3 years ago, and now America's Best Breakfast. So I fell in love with Adina while she was testing recipes on my first cookbook.
Okay. Fell in love with somebody who cooks for you.
Absolutely. The way to your heart.
That's wonderful.
Lee, how about pork specialties for breakfast?
Well, he said bacon.
I love bacon.
How about scrapple?
Scrapple? You know, I'm not a scrapple lover. And I will tell you, until we started the book, I had never had scrapple before.
Oh.
Where are you from?
Well, I'm from Missouri, but German background.
Right. So scrapple, I guess, is a combination
of sausage and mush.
Ground meat. I don't want to compare it to Spam. I'm not a scrapple lover.
No.
But I guess for those listeners out there who don't know what scrapple is, it's kind of like a Spam.
Well,
although it's delicious, I will tell you. I had not had it before we started writing the book. I don't know if they'll ever have it again, but I enjoyed having it.
Okay.
Well, do you have any Spam recipes in your book?
We don't have Spam recipes, but had they sponsored my book tour, I might have considered it, and maybe for the second one we'll do that.
Go to Hawaii, yeah.
Right, that's right.
Let's talk about how you going across America. So how did you pick the restaurants you went to? To get the recipes.
Same way we did Fried and True. We kind of, you know, sat down and looked at where had the best recipes and where we thought had the best recipes. And you know what always happens? You kind of pick the cities. You know, when you're writing a book, you kind of want to group things together so you don't have to fly all over the country. You know, so you do a few.
Back and forth.
Back and forth.
In that region.
So certainly we didn't get all 52 states into the cookbook. But that gives us reason to do America's Best Breakfast, too. And really, we decide that we're going to a city, and then I think that social media today is the best way to find anything. You kind of tweet, or you put on Instagram, or you put on your Facebook, hey, you're going to Salt Lake City, you're going to St. Louis, who has the best breakfast? And everybody replies. I mean, you get hundreds of replies when you're saying that.
So you have too many.
You always have too many. Yeah, and, right. You know, normally you start with a list, and by the time you get to the city and you look at where you ended up and you only got to half of those places, because inevitably what happens, you go to the first restaurant of the day and a waitress will say, oh, my God, this is great French toast, but you really want the best French toast? I used to work here. And the waiters, waitresses, mm-hmm. and taxi drivers are the best way to find great breakfast food in any city.
Okay. Now, did you have a favorite breakfast or a favorite city?
Favorite city? I'll tell you, I don't know that I had a favorite city, but I will tell you I had never been to St. Louis before. Ah. And loved it.
That's Joe's town.
But
right.
You know, Evan Benn, the former food critic from the Herald, who just is from St. Louis. And we hadn't spoken before the book, but when I was in St. Louis writing, working on that chapter, he knew I was there through social media, and
Uncle
he sent me
Bill's.
A few names. What's that?
Uncle Bill's.
Uncle Bill's we went to. Right. I will tell you that we had some incredible meals in St. Louis. But we had good meals everywhere. I mean, we didn't have a meal that we didn't like. We had meals that didn't end up in the book. But when you can only have 75 recipes and you have 300, I mean, you have to cut.
Right.
Right. Now, so you traveled everywhere. But let's talk about some of the local, because there are a lot of Miami-Dade County restaurants. But what I like is that you also have some home cooking. And one of them was your mother's. And it's called, it was a German recipe. So tell us about that one and why you called it the German recipe.
Well, I only called it the German recipe because that's what my mother called it growing up. It was called German breakfast. And we never had it for breakfast. We had it for dinner, and we were not German. So to this day, we don't know why it was called German recipe. And I just asked my mother recently, and she has no idea either. But it's a very simple recipe. I make it all the time. I make it for myself. It's really like a scramble. Imagine it's, you know, hash brown potatoes, soft scrambled eggs, onions, bacon.
Sounding good.
Yeah, it's pretty delicious.
Sounding good.
How about the Civil War? Grits versus potatoes.
Well, you know, there's still a Civil War going on about right. that today. And I think it's, you know, I mean, today some grits are really so fantastic. There's a few great grit recipes in the book. Hominy Grill in South Carolina has a great, I love grits. But, you know, I love also great hash browns or home fries when you get them done.
We can love them both.
I have to ask about one of the things that you cooked here. It has marzipan in it. What is it?
What's marzipan?
No, I know what marzipan is.
You mean something that I made today?
Okay. Lee has brought us food today. I was just about to get to that, but Bonnie, you've been eating it nonstop.
I'm just about to try and get Joe's portion as well.
There's a lot of butter in there.
Well, wait, there's several. But tell us before we get to her sweet, what else is on the plate that she's eating?
You are eating one of my favorite. It's an almond orange coffee cake. And it really, I have to tell, it's almost like a croissant dough. So like if you have an almond croissant, I love almond croissants, and this is really
But a croissant has like a
It's flaky.
A puff pastry.
It's puff pastry, yeah, but this is kind of like the almond paste. It's right. really not marzipan, it's almond paste in that. So it's almond paste, it's almond orange rind.
She really is making me give her.
I love it too. I brought you recipes. Neither of them are in America's Best Breakfast because I flew in this morning. And I had to bake this last night since I promised to bring something.
I baked this in his apartment in New York.
I baked it in New York
City. Came in a private plane and brought it to us.
Yes.
So the cake is just really delicious. I ate the entire thing in one bite. But but let's go back to the savory.
I made two empanadas. I love empanadas. They're so easy. I always have empanada dough. And one of them is a spinach empanada, and the other one is a ground beef and coriander empanada. They couldn't be easier.
But there's a little curry in the ground.
There is curry. There's a curry. I love curry. Yeah. So
It's a great dough, though.
It's a great dough. It's very buttery.
He made the dough, right? I made the dough, sure. Oh, it's delicious.
Sure.
And has a little bit of sweetness to it.
There's no sugar in that. So, Linda said the same thing. No, unless I baked them both at the same time or made them. So maybe when I was rolling out the dough from the empanadas, maybe I didn't clean the counter.
But it wasn't a lot. No, it's just tiny, tiny.
Well, probably some granules left over from the coffee cake.
Well, it's very, very good. And so, and would you have this empanada for breakfast?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I think empanadas are for breakfast. I don't know. there are a few things I wouldn't eat for breakfast. I mean, I eat cold steak for breakfast, you know, from the night before. I just, I don't know, I eat it regularly, but I love eating leftovers for breakfast in the morning, like Thanksgiving
cold
morning.
Pizza is pretty good, too.
I love, are you pizza? I listen, I don't even preheat the pizza. You know, if you have great, you know, we just got a pizza oven. For those of you who follow me on social media, you know that I've been using our pizza oven and been making pizza 3 or 4 times a week. So we eat it all the time.
What temperature does it get to?
800.
Oh.
Yeah, we have a Marforni pizza oven. It's about 3,600 pounds. It's a big production to get into our new home in the Gables, but we use it. We make pizza all the time.
Is it outside or inside?
It's outside.
It's outside.
It's more
outside
than your car,
Linda.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And in America's Best Breakfast, we have a great pizza recipe from Nancy Silverton from Osteria Mozza in Los Angeles. It's a great, rather than a tomato-based topping, it's kind of a whipped cream, not a sweet whipped cream, just whipped cream with salt. There's potatoes, rosemary, bacon on the pizza. And,
whipped cream?
Well, you whip cream.
And you put
add
it
a little
on the
salt,
pizza?
And you put it as the coating for the pizza
instead of a tomato sauce.
Yeah,
oh.
And it's so delicious.
Whipped cream. Oh,
it's Nancy. I mean, anything that Nancy Silverton makes in Los Angeles or anywhere.
Anything
in the world.
With whipped cream
and bacon. There
right.
we go.
There you go. You're
can't
happy day,
it.
Joe Cooper. All right, we have to take a break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and as you might have guessed, we're talking about America's Best Breakfast with Lee Schrager. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
Miami New Drama follows up the success of The Golem of Havana with A Special Day, based on the Oscar-winning film. You don't want to miss this critically acclaimed theatrical gem for only 4 performances at the Colony Theater, May 5th through 8th. Tickets at miaminewdrama.org.
Operator, this is Julia Tuttle in Miami. I need you to dial Mr. Flagler, Henry Flagler in West Palm Beach.
Yes, ma'am. Hold a moment, please.
Oh, hello again, Julia.
Henry, how are you? How's the weather there?
Fine, Julia, but we've been hit with another freeze and destroyed all the crops.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, it's beautiful weather down here, and the fruit is just divine. Come see for yourself.
That's History in the Making on WLRN-TV, your South Florida storyteller station.
Give a gift to WLRN today and receive as our gift to you a beautiful arrangement of flowers delivered to the mom in your life in time for Mother's Day.
Here's how it works. Visit WLRN.org, choose from one of 2 arrangements, make your pledge, and we'll make sure the flowers are delivered anywhere in the United States and Canada, courtesy of Field of Flowers.
You'll also be automatically entered to win a 4-pack of tickets to WLRN Radio Theater's production of Little Women and Brunch at the Broward Center.
Send your love to mom at WLRN.org or call 866-247-9576.
We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking about America's Best Breakfast with author Lee Brian Schrager. He's been giving us a delicious journey through many of America's favorite meals. That's breakfast, America's favorite meal. That's what it's become, and we've been eating and enjoying it.
We haven't gotten any calls. I can't believe that.
Well, they're all busy eating breakfast.
I guess so.
Yes, of course.
800-743-9576 if you'd like to join in.
Well, right now it's Dinner in Minutes time, and today is Cinco de Mayo. And so we're going to celebrate that today with a quick and easy Dinner in Minutes, and it's a steak fajita with a corn salad. So if you don't know what a fajita is, everybody I'm sure knows, but it's a tortilla that's filled with grilled steak and some vegetables and a little fajita sauce. Now, I give you the recipe to make your own fajita sauce, but if you want to make it even easier, you can buy a bottle of fajita sauce in the market and put it all together. So the steak only takes about 5 or 7 minutes to grill. Along with that, we grilled some sliced onions, some sliced green bell pepper. And you can either use an outside grill or a stovetop grill, or even the broiler if that's what you've got. So simple. But you need to warm the tortillas. So the easy way to do it is you wrap them in a little foil, put them in on the grill just for a couple of minutes so they'll get warm, and you wrap everything in it. The corn salad, I make it with defrosted corn kernels, roasted red pepper, a little lettuce, and that makes a very fun and colorful dinner. Now, you can get that entire recipe and a photo. It's at my website, dinnerinminutes.com, and please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. So, Fred, what are we drinking for breakfast?
Well, you know, I love breakfast, so I'm enchanted with Lee's book. I think it's a great thing. But as you know, I'm the wine guy, and you might think that breakfast and wine are an awkward pairing. You got champagne at 7 a.m. or Zinfandel with Fruit Loops. Sounds scandalous.
Zinfandel with Fruit Loops? Okay.
Yeah, you know, they're both kind of fruity. It might work.
Yeah, at least anyway, just sitting here with a smile on his face.
I agree with Fred. I think it's, you know, it's cocktail time somewhere in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. Greenwich Mean Time, maybe, or something like that. But if you think about it, as Lee was pointing out, breakfast all across America is not just for breakfast anymore. It's a really great meal at any time of the day, and you can have it at midnight in any Denny's. In fact, one time on Valentine's Day, the restaurant we had reservations at stiffed us, and we had a Valentine's breakfast at Denny's. It was great.
Well, anyway, look at McDonald's. You know, Fred, look at McDonald's. They started doing breakfast all day, and yesterday they reported their earnings, and they have record earnings this time, and they credit breakfast all day due to that. So people
yeah,
eating
I heard
breakfast.
That. Everybody loves it. Yeah, and of course, IHOP will make you a Western omelet well after the sun is over the yard arm, so you can have wine. Although you also might buy the argument that eggs, which are the quintessential breakfast food, are in the same category as artichokes, and foods that are impossible to pair with wine. They say that eggs make most wine taste metallic, but I don't agree with that either. Linda, you won't be surprised to hear that champagne, or at least cheap bubbly, goes very well with eggs.
Well, why would I be surprised, Fred?
You wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, at least you get it in every week.
That's right. Anyway, just think of your last brunch. Champagne scrubbing bubbles are great at stripping those yolks from your palate and refreshing it for the next bite, which is what wine is all about. And as Bonnie pointed out, if it's early in the morning, you can add a little orange juice to the bubbly and call it a health drink. Also, eggs, while they're very popular, are not in every breakfast dish. If you look through Lee's book, if you can get some meat into your breakfast dish, you have a natural pairing with wine. Like a good corned beef hash he was talking about would go very nicely with a light red wine like Chianti. Or a Spanish omelet would go well with a light-bodied red Rioja if it has enough of the powerful, spicy Spanish sausage they call chorizo. And for Joe, bacon with its bacon fat is also a
now Joe has a big smile, Fred.
Yeah, so don't even drain it. Don't even bother to drain it.
That's right, absolutely. That could benefit from those scrubbing bubbles, too, so you could do that very well. And now other breakfast dishes can be pretty sweet, French toast or crepes with apricot jam or pancakes with maple syrup. Let's face it, these are desserts masquerading as breakfast. So they could go very well with a sweet-tasting demi-sec sparkling wine or maybe even a white dessert wine like a late harvest Sauvignon Blanc. And then, of course, finally, I see that Lee's breakfast book includes a wonderful-sounding recipe called Filipino Steak with Garlic Fried Rice from Uncle Mike's in Chicago.
That was delicious. I was thinking about that when you were talking about meat.
Yeah, red meat calls for red wine, so you could pop out a full-flavored Cabernet Sauvignon of that.
I think I'm going to do that tomorrow morning, Fred.
So, Lee, the next year's South Beach Wine and Food Festival, maybe you could have a breakfast event build around pairing all-day breakfast treats with wine. I know I'd come.
Well, you know, we did a late-night breakfast event this year at South Beach. The book wasn't even out yet, but I wanted to test the waters, and Chrissy Teigen and her talented husband, John Legend, hosted it, and we had lots of Bloody Marys and mimosas, but next year we'll pair everything with wine.
Yeah, that would make a whole lot of sense.
Okay, Fred, he said he's coming.
I'm coming. I'll
You're
be
coming.
There.
All right. Very good. Well, Lee, let's talk a little bit about some of the unusual local breakfasts that you have in your book. And one, I was kind of wondering what it is. It's a bacon and cheese, egg and cheese, bacon, egg and cheese Paco, P-A-C-O.
Well,
what is that?
Paco is like a taco, the shape of it. It's basically a firm pancake,
It's
a pancake taco. Okay. So it's a pancake batter that you just mold it or fold it into a taco shape. You let it sit for a few hours, and it takes the shape of a taco shell. And you fill it with egg, bacon, and cheese, and you have a Paco. And that's from a great food on a roll food truck in Fort Lauderdale. They are fantastic. And it was one of my favorite things from the travels, finding that Paco.
So is the pancake fluffy? Or is it just
a firm, regular, just
make a pancake and use
it
like a taco?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's great. So
all
creative.
Right.
It's so easy to eat. So in one bite, you get all your
So just by sitting, it firms up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. And then I was intrigued by another one where you call, I'm not even pronouncing it right, a malawak?
A malawak is a Syrian flatbread, and that comes from the guys at the Broken Shaker and 27 on Miami Beach at, in the Indian Creek Hotel. Fantastic. They have a great shashuka, a great malawak.
What's a shashuka?
Shashuka is a traditional Israeli breakfast, and it's a Turkish Israeli breakfast. It comes with a ground lamb, tomatoes, and eggs are poached right in it. It's fantastic.
Oh, I've seen that.
It's really quite delicious, shashuka.
I know a good kosher red wine that would go very well with that.
Fred, I'd like to think you know a good wine that would go with every America's Best Breakfast recipe.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, Fred, that sounds great. And then, of course, it's kind of like a cultural journey throughout the whole United States when you look at all of the different recipes and the different ethnic flavors.
Well, that's what writing a book allows you to travel, and travel is freedom, and the freedom to try all these things that you don't normally get to do and step out of your comfort zone. And that's what I love about traveling, you know, getting to try new things. Who wants to go someplace and try, you know, I want to explore and try new things.
Oh, well, we can explore and try new things right here by America's Best Breakfast. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Another very tasty week. Loved the empanadas, loved the cake. It was an orange almond cake.
An orange almond pound cake.
Mm-hmm. All right. It wasn't very poundy. It was
no.
Just light and fluffy.
It was light.
Okay. Thank you so much, Lee.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joe and Bonnie, you ate well today.
We did.
I want to say happy Mother's Day to you and Bonnie.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, next week we're going to be talking about burgers and beer. Did you know that May is Burger Month? I just want everybody to know that. With Lori Grazzi from Kush Restaurant and David Rodriguez. He's from the Windward Brewery. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for joining us this hour. Our lead producer, Richard Ives. Today's technical director, Michael Stock. Polly Landis is associate producer. As always, we have free audio archives at our website. That's WLRN.org. Tomorrow at 1, it's Science Friday. Monday, Bonnie and I return with a program about the Tampa Bay Skybridge collapse tragedy of 1980 with journalist Bill DeYoung. And now May 5th's calendar. On this day in 1821, 195 years ago, the death of French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte in exile on the Isle of St. Helena. Official cause was gastric cancer. Others say he was poisoned by the British. And on this day in 1942, 74 years ago, the birth of the late country music icon Tammy Wynette in one of my favorite towns, Red Bay, Alabama. She was married 5 times, including once to singer George Jones. Stand by your man. And one more on this day in 1958, 56 years ago, critic and author James Agee is posthumously awarded a Pulitzer Prize for his classic novel, A Death in the Family. It recounted his young father's death in an auto wreck. So we leave with a thought from Napoleon Bonaparte, who by 1811 ruled some 70 million people across an empire which dominated Europe, the most powerful since the days of the Roman Empire. Quote from Napoleon, "In politics, stupidity is not a handicap." It still applies. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, and Fred Tasker. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.